You might remember this scenario from school or university. A teacher or lecturer is at the front of the classroom explaining something pretty complex, a concept you're not familiar with at all. Maybe it is rocket science. Your brain isn't processing the information properly. You just don't get it. That moment, though, rather than being a negative thing, can actually be a pivotal part of the learning process. Associate Professor Jason Lodge from the University of Queensland is part of a group of researchers who are studying the role of confusion in learning. So, Jason, when your head feels like it's about to explode trying to take in a new concept, what's actually going on in your brain?
Hi, Amanda. Well, there's quite a lot of activity going on in the brain when we're dealing with something like that is confusing. And it's quite different to a lot of other emotions in that, for example, with fear, if you see a snake or a spider, you get a pretty direct kind of response. And I mean, most things are pretty complicated in the brain. It's a complicated organism. But the important thing with confusion is that it's very different in that there is an element of it that's about what we know. So, for example, if you're in a hotel room in a foreign country and you wake up from a really deep sleep, you feel this kind of disoriented kind of state, and that really is about not knowing where you are or what day it is. And it's that relationship between how we feel and what we know that makes confusion quite different to other emotions. And we see quite diffuse activity across the brain because of that, because it involves multiple systems working together.
Well, confusion is generally seen as a negative kind of state, isn't it?
It is, yes.
You know, it makes you feel, well, in a learning situation, it makes you feel stupid, you know, like you just can't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the interesting things that we've been finding in our research is that it does play a fairly pivotal role. But we're sort of finding that a lot of people are both reluctant to report it. So when we get people in and they do some of our studies and we ask them to fill out forms and say, you know, how confused are you finding this material? People will often say, oh, no, this is fine. I'm not finding it confusing at all. But then when you chat to them afterwards, you say, well, you know, most people find this bit, you know, a bit hard. And how did you really find it? Oh, it was really confusing. So there's a reluctance for people to even admit that something's confusing. It's that much of a kind of uncomfortable experience for most people. And on the other side of that, of course, we've got teachers who
So how are teachers generally taught to handle confusion in the classroom?
I think traditionally we see with teachers that they try to avoid it at all costs because we do have this negative connotation attached to it. So one of the things that you will often find teachers will do is if they see a confused face in their classes, they will try to intervene as quickly as possible to try and make sure that whatever the student's stuck on, they get over almost immediately.
Well, your research that you and colleagues have done shows that actually being in that state of confusion when you're trying to learn something new can be a good thing. So how is that, Jason?
So what we're finding is that there are a lot of this is around mental structures that we kind of create in our mind to try and understand the world. So when you've got one of these structures and it's wrong or it needs to be updated to match what the scientific understanding might be, to an extent you need to start to undo the structure that you already have, if you like, the incorrect structure. And often you experience a sort of disequilibrium, which is a mismatch between what you think you know and new information that's coming in. And confusion often accompanies that kind of disequilibrium experience, and it is a really critical part in undoing the incorrect way that we're trying to understand something so that we can then build up the correct way to understand it.
Isn't there a risk, though, that, you know, because feeling confused is such an uncomfortable state to be in, isn't the risk that, you know, the student's just going to give up when they're feeling that?
Absolutely. And, you know, based what we've already talked about, there is an element of this which is about our self-identity as competent people. We don't like to feel like we're stupid and that we don't understand something. So there is an element of this where we need to actually deal with that so that people will then start to think, oh, okay, this is a kind of normal part of the process. And it can be difficult to move away from that. Absolutely.
So, as a classroom teacher then, you know, whether that's in primary school or high school or at university, how do you then, identify a student who's confused, given that, you know, people don't like to admit it. And then what do you do about it?
So I think for classroom teachers, it's actually relatively straightforward comparatively to identify when a student is confused. So that's kind of not the difficult bit. The confusion face is generally really obvious. You sort of see students screw their faces up
before,
and scratch their temples, right? So the difficult part is to understand why they're confused. And because it is that combination of what you're feeling and what you know, it's often quite tricky to understand where the student's going wrong in their understanding. So there's an element of this where you need to try and diagnose what the problem is for that student and then come up with the right intervention. So if you use the wrong intervention, it can actually reinforce the misconception that they already have. So there's a really difficult balance to be struck between, you know, that individualized kind of approach and something that's going to work for a whole classroom full of students if they're all starting to look confused about something. So it's a tricky situation for teachers.
Yeah, and how do you help and encourage children and adults to actually feel comfortable with confusion, since it is unsettling?
So I think that there are a few different approaches for dealing with this. One is to just try and normalise the experience. So we've been doing some work with teachers in Queensland and Victoria to help them to understand what the very thing that we're talking about. Why is confusion important? What does it mean in terms of the way that we change the way that we think about various different ideas? And I think that there's a big part of this which is trying to get away from the stigma that confusion is a really bad thing to experience. The other thing that I think is quite important is that once you get the hang of that, you can then start to think about ways that you might use confusion in a more strategic way in the way that you teach. So instead of trying to avoid things that are confusing or that people are likely to have misconceptions about, making that the focus of the lesson can then flip the whole thing on its head so that the confusion actually becomes really beneficial and the students can see that benefit as they go through and feel like it's okay to find the thing confusing.
In Life Matters, confusion reigns, and that's okay. It has learning benefits. Jason Lodge is an educational psychologist. He's the Deputy Director of Teaching and Learning in the School of Education at Queensland University. And when you feel like you don't understand something, how do you respond? Does it bring back all those memories that, you know, you don't get maths or maps or money, so you shut down and block it out? And when you do that, of course, you don't take in new information. Have you, though, ever managed to turn that confusion, as Jason's telling us, into a kind of positive as part of a process along the way of understanding something new? Tell us when on Facebook. Now, Jason, you, along with colleagues at Melbourne University, have done a study about confusion in a digital learning environment, so online learning, in other words, when students are not sitting in front of a teacher. Now, why have you done this specifically?
So there's two reasons. One is that we know that increasingly students are learning online, not just students, but all of us. So, you know, you want to put up a fence in the backyard, a lot of people will go straight to YouTube to watch a video about how to do it. So one part of this is that increasingly we're spending our time online learning all sorts of different things. And then what that frees us up to do in the classroom is to actually use that knowledge in meaningful ways. The other side is that it gives us some insight into moment by moment what people are doing and thinking while they have an experience that they interpret as confusing, and then it gives us more of an idea about the ways in which we might then help them to overcome that confusion before it gets to the point where it becomes frustrating and they give up.
So how did you measure confusion and its effects for online learning?
So we use a number of different measures because, as I said, people will often not self-report that they're confused. They'll try to avoid it. So we use a battery of things. We use EEG, so to look at the electrical signals in the brain. We also use eye tracking, which is really useful because when people move around a screen, you can sort of get a sense of whether they might not necessarily be picking up on the right things. We use digital kind of traces that they leave in the environment. So what do they click on? How long do they click on things? So broadly areas that we think about as learning analytics. And all of these things give us a combined picture about what might be going on. So rather than just relying on people to tell us they're confused, we've also got a number of other measures that help us understand that. One of the key things that we also do is that we take a screen video So as they're working through a particular task online, we take a video of what they're doing on the screen and we play it back to them and say, what were you thinking here and how is this working for you? And that's been really powerful too.
Well, are there ways then with what you've done there that online learning could be set up differently that would make it possible, you know, for teachers to identify and help students in the right way at the right time who are confused?
Ultimately, that's the aim, and that's why we're trying to get a better picture of how it actually works in these environments. The tricky thing with online is that you can get a sense, particularly that students can become overconfident, because a lot of online material is really quite slick these days, you know, so there's lots of really complicated simulations and videos and other things that make the experience really kind of fluent. So you can watch, the classic example of this is you can watch one of those great BBC documentaries by Brian Cox or somebody like that, and it's really kind of engaging and amazing, and after sitting there for an hour, it's like, oh, I completely understand quantum physics now.
But do
and
you?
And it can be a bit of a trap, that's right. So that's one of the main things that we've been focusing on, is finding that particularly in an online environment, it's almost as though there's not enough confusion going on. So the interventions that we have to think about implementing need to take some of those things into account. And that can differ vastly between students. So what we're aiming to do is come up with some sort of predictive model that will try and give us a sense of why they're getting confused, at what point, and then we'll tailor an intervention accordingly. And that may be partly driven by algorithms and the way that the environment's set up.
Well, whether it's online learning or it is face-to-face in a classroom, what would be an example of how a teacher could direct students who are stuck or confused to use some different thinking strategies to understand something new?
So one of them is the front end aspect that I talked about, which mm-hmm. is making them feel okay. The second bit is then to say, okay, we need to reinterpret what confusion actually means. So if you're hitting a point where you're frustrated or stuck on something, then can we reinterpret that to be an idea that you maybe need to change the strategy that you're using to understand this? And that can be deliberately kind of built into the way that a lesson is structured. And there are really great lessons around misconceptions that do this deliberately. So, for example, a classic is you ask students to predict what's going to happen when you drop a bowling ball and a ping pong ball. Most of them will say the bowling ball will drop faster. Then you show them, and they're like, oh, okay, well, they drop at the same rate. And then you've got a moment there that you can actually start to intervene on the misconception itself, because you've created the setting to enable that to happen. So what you're doing is almost changing the structure of the lesson itself so that the confusion becomes that focus point. Now, if you've got individual students that are getting stuck on elements of that, then it's about how you would give them feedback or prompts that would allow them to understand the bit that they're not quite getting their head around.
Is it mostly science concepts that are applicable here with what you're talking about with confusion?
Most of the work that we've been doing has been with science concepts, but there's certainly examples where you would see similar things in other areas. I think the thing with the science ones is that it's a little clearer as to what the sort of accepted understanding of a scientific idea might be. You know, we have a broad understanding of how weather works, and that's something that, you know, people can have misconceptions about. Whereas in other areas, you know, literature or arts or humanities, it's not quite as straightforward, but we have been working with people in other areas to try and understand what this might mean in their context. And it's a lot more tricky because there's a level of interpretation there beyond what you would expect in science that that's quite tricky to deal with.
So then, Jason, how did students tend to react when you do sort of promote to them the idea that being confused is a beneficial part of their learning?
I think you can imagine that for a lot of them, they get confused about that.
Yeah.
So I think the best way that I've found to deal with that is to actually show them. And as a teacher myself, I try to be quite explicit about what I'm doing and why. So I think that when you model this and then, you know, give them a really good example. So when I used to teach psychology, one of the things that I would do at the beginning of a class on the senses is to say, okay, who thinks we've got five senses? You know, most people put up their hands. That's what they've been taught their whole life. Well, we think that there's at least 21. And they're all like, wow. And then I'll say to them, Right, that's quite confusing, isn't it? Let's talk about what that means and then how that relates to how we understand what senses are, and then the lesson will unfold from there. Mm. So by giving them a really concrete example and being explicit about how that confusion is going to help their learning, that I think helps to overcome some of the problems.
Well, I guess you can take all this as a kind of lesson to apply maybe in general life. The next time I feel like I'm never going to understand the instructions for putting up a flat pack of furniture, I'm going to think of what you said, Jason. Associate Professor Jason Lodge is from the School of Education at Queensland University. Educational psychology is his field. Jason, great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. Great to be here.
So, yes, have you ever managed to get comfortable with confusion and turn it into a kind of positive thing as part of your process of learning some new thing that span you out, first of all? Tell us when and how on Facebook. And you're listening unequivocally to Life Matters.